This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Advocates are warning that the First Amendment right to freedom of the press is under attack.
Former CNN anchor Don Lemon was arrested on federal charges tied to a protest at a church. Says he was reporting as a journalist when demonstrators interrupted a service to protest immigration enforcement.
The FBI has raided the home of a Washington Post journalist who's been covering the Trump administration's federal government firing since he took office. The FBI took a phone, two laptops, and a watch.
Washington Post is laying off a third of its workforce across both the newsroom and its business operations. The cuts reportedly affect more than 300 of the approximately 800 journalists.
Joining me now are two people who care quite a bit about press freedom and your access to journalism. Seth Stern, who's chief of advocacy at the Freedom of the Press Foundation. Also, actor John Cusack. He's a founding board member for the Freedom of the Press Foundation and recently wrote an op-ed in the Sun-Times about the need for more paywall-free news, particularly reporting based on Freedom of Information Act requests, or FOIAs. Welcome to WBEZ and In the Loop. Wonderful to be with you.
You too. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
So, John, off the bat, you know, often when we have an actor here in studio, they're here to promote something, maybe a movie, right? But it might be surprising for folks listening that we're actually sitting down to talk to you about free access to news and press freedom at large. You're, as I mentioned, a founding member of the, or board member of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. So talk us through when and how you got involved with this issue.
Oh, all right. Let's see. 2010 or 11, I think. A bunch of us got together and we were concerned about the PayPal blockade to WikiLeaks. That was sort of a bipartisan thing. And we thought that that was a bad idea. And we got together and we thought, well, let's beat this blockade by forming an organization. But for various reasons, we didn't want to be known as the Julian Assange Super PAC. So we said, let's use this because we want to make a broad umbrella organization based on the rights and principles, because it, you know, you don't need a weatherman to see which way the wind was blowing back then and still to this day. So we started it, and it's been a terrific organization. It's done a lot of great things.
Let's talk about this day, as you mentioned. How would you describe the current moment when it comes to the news industry?
Nowhere to go but up.
So where would you say it's at? It's at the bottom, but what does that look like to you?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of issues there. Access journalism, subservient journalism, consolidation of corporate media, all those things, of course, play into it. But I think one of the fulcrum points we pointed out was the idea that paywalls are creating sort of a tiered citizenry where they can get, where people can get news and not. And with the advent of AI and with the knowledge that Silicon Valley and your tech overlords, your friendly tech overlords, want to keep people confused. They want to keep them addicted to junk, and they want to keep them talking about anything but billionaires paying tax. They'll literally go do anything to keep you from talking about politics that may possibly affect them. And I think that's been pretty proven. So with the advent, you know, now we have AI where I saw Professor John Mersheimer from University of Chicago is in a big thing with Instagram, because he's been very popular as being a, I'd say a very staunch anti-war, but realist about the wars in Ukraine and in Gaza and around the world in geopolitics. And there are now deep fakes of him saying things that he doesn't believe that are now getting as much views as his real thing. So given this whole, you know, perfect storm that's, I think, damaging media, I think one thing we can do with this in this situation is try to get FOIA-based reporting, right, beyond the paywalls, or certainly beyond, like, after a week or two. I don't see any reason why this reporting shouldn't be free, because the right to know becomes a privilege. So as Seth and I were talking, you know, if somebody's during the ICE raids and Midway Blitz, you know, if you're making $40,000 a year, you're not going to be able to pay for the information you need to know what are your rights, who was arrested, where are they. So, you know, it's a perverse thing that the FOIA-based reporting would be behind a paywall, because the entire premise is based on it's our information.
Mm-hmm.
The government is saving, is preserving this information for us. We have a right to know.
And therefore, we should have access for all.
Correct. Now, we know the problems in the journalism industry as a business, but, you know, it's not just a business, because no other business is protected in the Constitution, because it's a right and a fundamental need for self-governance.
Yeah. Seth, what comes to mind for you? You nodded through some of John's sentiments.
No, that was great. Another point to emphasize is that although many assume that taking content outside of paywalls is bad for business, that has not proven to be the case. A couple of outlets that have unpaywalled their FOIA-based reporting, Wired, 404 Media, have told us at events that Freedom of the Press Foundation has hosted that unpaywalling and publicizing the decision to unpaywall unlocked revenue, drove subscribers, drove goodwill, drove donations. Outlets really benefit from this because it builds public trust. And the truth is, very few people are paying for news because they can't find another way to get information. They're paying for news because they want to support outlets that they think are doing good work and that are important to them. As John was saying, when you look at the state of the information landscape, sure, people have for years been saying, well, I don't need to pay for news. There's free information all over the internet. As that information gets junkier and junkier, as deepfakes become more prevalent, as AI slop is everywhere, I think that pendulum's going to swing in the other direction. People are going to say, I'm tired of having to figure out whether everything I see online is real.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have a reliable source of information, and they're going to go back to names that they can trust.
Sifting through misinformation is difficult.
Right.
Well, you know,
right.
When you have that tiered access, you know, and people can't get the news, the void is filled with disinformation, lies, propaganda, and basically just junk. And to, you know, piggyback on what Seth was saying, one of our board members is Katie Drummond, who's the global editor of Wired, and she took the challenge to made a calculated risk to tell everybody she was going to unpaywall her FOIA-based reporting, which is the real hard news. You know, you want to keep interviews with actors or entertainers or celebrities, yeah, put it behind a paywall. But the stuff that people need as citizens, she made that calculated bet, and she said it succeeded beyond her wildest imaginations. Her subscriptions went up. People were grateful. So it's not only the right thing to do. We're arguing that it's good business. So it could be a win-win, but right now you have very, very intelligent people who are very confused by what's news and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
So our argument is let's have the newspapers be the place and the journalists and the media companies that are doing that work. Let's have people remember, okay, we go to them. We don't go to Instagram for our news.
Well, you know, the Post, as I mentioned, recently laid off nearly 30% of its staff. Having Jeff Bezos bankrolling the operation didn't necessarily prevent journalists from losing their jobs, Seth.
No, it didn't. I think there are a number of assumptions that the events of the Trump administration have shattered, and one of them is the assumption that billionaires will operate news outlets in the public's interest out of a sense of altruism and public service. That is not the case. Billionaires might be hands-off to an extent when there is no reason for them to be hands-on, but when they're choosing between their business interests, whether in the case of the Washington Post, which is looking to get on Trump's good side by platforming, you know, Melania and Jeff Bezos' other company, Amazon, or Paramount, which is putting the interests of its corporate transactions ahead of the interests of its newsrooms. Disney, which probably values its theme parks as a far more lucrative business than his newsrooms, and wants to get on the administration's good side. So you're seeing billionaire-owned and corporate-owned conglomerates sabotage the editorial end of their operations. And then when it comes down to just regular business, they're treating it like any other asset. They're laying off the positions that they don't see as profitable in the very short term. They have no sense or no appreciation for the public value of news and the responsibility that comes with ownership of an outlet like the Washington Post that has that rich history that, you know, needs to be preserved and needs to be kept in a condition where it can continue being the Washington Post. Mm. The editorial page has already been sabotaged through censorship. The newsroom now through layoffs. And of course, Jeff Bezos could very easily inject some funds into the Washington Post to keep it viable. It would be nothing to him, a drop in the bucket, but he's unwilling to do so.
Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and we're speaking with actor and activist John Cusack. He's a founding board member of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. And also with us is the organization's chief of advocacy, Seth Stern. Seth, talk more about the Freedom of the Press Foundation and just the on-the-ground practical work that you folks do.
Sure. Well, I run the advocacy operation with a small team of attorneys and career press freedom advocates. We engage in legislative advocacy to advance legislation that is favorable to the press and stop more often legislation that is not favorable to the press. We write a lot of op-eds, do a lot of media, and try to get press freedom to the top of the public discourse, build appreciation across political divides of the fundamental nature of the free press. Because even those who don't like the media, don't like the mainstream media, how do they even know they don't like the mainstream media? They mm-hmm. know because they know because of freedom of the press. They know because someone else had the freedom to point out what they perceive as flaws in the mainstream media. So we are all dependent on freedom of the press. Nobody gathers their own news just like nobody paves their own roads. You need a journalist to do that.
You know, we're also living in a time when the president of the United States is almost daily attacking journalists mm-hmm. and suing news organizations for coverage that he finds unfair. We've also seen the funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting clawed back by Congress. We saw what that did to CPB afterwards. What effect would you say the Trump administration is having on press freedom and just the ability of the press to do its job, John?
Well, I think you've seen from a mainstream point of view, it took the New York Times, I think, 3.5 years to call Trump's lies. And they use the word mistruth or, you know, alternate facts and all those things. So, mm-hmm. you know, the owner-donor class of the legacy media, let's face it, they've collapsed as cowards for the most part. The individual journalists are always doing good work. It's not that. It's the editors, I think, and the people calling those shots. I think there's a lot of pushback as well, and there's some who are holding the line, but it's dark.
Mm. What's the biggest threat to the press right now, Seth?
Well,
besides fascism,
more or less. It's hard to identify one, but the Hannah Nathanson raid has a lot of people very concerned about the potential that the Espionage Act could be weaponized against journalists who publish government leaks. Unauthorized information from the government, which is a constitutional right of journalists, but you've got this 100-year-old statute that the administration reads otherwise. And we've got a Supreme Court in place that is, let's say, unpredictable. So I don't know where the Nathanson raid will go. In the past, the Espionage Act has mostly been wielded against journalist sources as opposed to journalists themselves, the exception being Julian Assange. Whether you consider him a journalist or not isn't really the point. The conduct he was charged with is the same thing, journalist,
yeah.
obtaining documents and publishing them. Are we going to see that expanded to more traditional journalists? Of course, everything we're seeing coming out of Brendan Carr and the FCC is highly alarming. He's essentially running the FCC as a shakedown racket to beat licensees into compliance with Trump's policies. He has redefined the public interest rule as license for the FCC to police the content of news outlets, but he won't tell the news outlets what he sees the public interest as being. You have to guess at rules that reside only in his head. You don't know what he'll criminalize next or what he'll penalize next. All you really know is that the best way to stay on Brendan Carr's good side is to not upset Donald Trump. So there is an incentive to do that. What we're seeing is an administration that is finding any reason it can to target journalists. Yeah. Usually targeting journalists is a last resort. Prosecutors sort of recognize that, one, there will be political backlash to targeting journalists, and two, that it is not in the interest of justice to prosecute journalists when there is an alternative, when it's not needed. That's why you see when journalists are arrested at protests, usually the charges get dropped pretty quickly. We're seeing the opposite now. We're seeing an administration that is burning the midnight oil, finding any excuse it can to target journalists and their sources. So sure, that's creating a climate of self-censorship. And the thing with self-censorship is we don't know what news we haven't read because of it. We yeah. only know what we read. We don't know what we don't know.
And I think they're very clever in exploiting flaws that were there before the administration. The, you know, our organization's been working, what, 10, 12 years now, something like that. And case after case of the Espionage Act, it's an antiquated old law based in World War I. And it was being used to basically scare the hell or bludgeon whistleblowers and their sources. And there, you know, it's usually around national security issues, war and peace, and state secrets that, you know, firmly fall in the public's right to know. Whatever you think of Mr. Assange, collateral damage video, that was the gig. Yeah. You know, that was the gig where they thought, okay, this in the Iraq war was being, you know, we were getting balloons and celebrations and people looking at, look at those beautiful rockets. And it was, you know, basically bullshit propaganda.
Yeah.
And so that was what he released. And the state said, oh, no, 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 no. We're going to come down hard on you. And they were using the Espionage Act. So Trump's just blown through that. I mean, they're just all blown right through those doors. They don't even have any pretense anymore. They'll, I mean, they'll go after anyone. I mean, look, we're in a situation where we have masked goons killing people on the streets. And, you know.
Well, you know,
we all know our history, so we know this doesn't, this only goes one way.
And so given some of what we're talking about here, a good amount of skepticism, I think, is probably wise and healthy as we, you know, peruse on the interwebs. I think, though, for a lot of people, it's crossed over into this severe mistrust.
Well, also, like when the newspapers give in to an extortion from the Trump administration and pay ransom money instead of standing on principles and saying, no, 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 we've been here for 200 years. Go to hell.
Mm. But people, you know, and people aren't just, you know, mistrusting the government. They're not trusting news outlets as well. So how do outlets build that trust back in this polarized environment?
On paywall important news so we can get that trust back.
Yeah, and take credit when you're right. I think the way to get through it is good reporting.
And also, you know, as they say, and putting heat and accountability into the editors, the owner, donor class, because, you know, they say there's no neutral walls in a museum. Well, there's no neutral front pages.
You know,
what gets covered and why it gets in the papers. There has to be a fiduciary sense of public goodwill and public trust that I think existed in this country in my lifetime at a much higher level than what we have today.
That was actor, writer, producer, and activist John Cusack and Seth Stern, Chief of Advocacy at the Freedom of the Press Foundation, where John is also a founding board member. Still to come, more than 400 years after his death, William Shakespeare's son Hamnet is having a moment. We sit down with the cast of the new play at Chicago's Shakespeare Theater. Up next on In the Loop from 91.5 WBEZ. First, though, it's Claire Lane.